Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at QCBT.com.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Alma Gall, a feature writer for the Quad City Times about the late sculptor Beverly Pepper. Thanks for talking today, Alma.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, you wrote a series of interesting articles back in February about the artist Beverly Pepper. And since summer weather's finally arrived and the museums are reopening, I thought this would be a good time to talk about her work and where people can view them. Her monumental-sized sculptures are located in some of the most important art museums in the world, but we have some of her artwork right here. What were the circumstances behind Beverly Pepper coming to our community, and when was she here?
Lois Jecklin was the director of the Visiting Artists series in the 1980s, and Lois was very dedicated to art. I mean, she loved art, and she felt that everyone should have art in their life. And if they, if you did not, then you, there was something missing. And so she, as a visiting artist series, of course, you bring artists from outside the community into your community, and they do whatever it is they do. They perform, in Beverly's case, they sculpt. But what Lois was really looking for was how to make the creation of art, as she told me, more real, more accessible, and seeming to be a part of what we do every day. And so she started looking through long lists of artists' names and what they did. And Beverly Pepper stood out to her. And she thought, wow, that would be great to get her in our community. So Lois is a pretty gutsy woman. She wrote Beverly a letter, and through a set of circumstances, Beverly answered the letter. And then Lois was like, okay, I've got Beverly. Now, at this point, she had not talked to any foundry. She had not talked to Dieter, but she had a pretty good idea that she could get what she wanted. And so then she made those contacts, and then it went from there. But basically, it was Lois Jecklin, as director of visiting artists, who had the idea that Beverly could come here and make art with people in the community.
I now know the Visiting Artist Series is part of Quad City Arts, but I understand at that point it was run by Deere & Company. And Beverly was, I believe, the first visual artist to come. And, you know, and a company like Deere & Company was really essential, since she was making such monumental sized work. She needed their collaboration and their draftsmen and engineers to pull this off. Where did she create her sculptures?
Well, first, I just want to say Visiting Artists was a self-standing project. It had really nothing to do with Deere & Company, but they were going to help with the project. And so the John Deere Foundry in Silvis, which is not any longer a foundry, not any longer associated with Deere, but that is where they made the sculptures. And in the beginning, Lois just had the idea that they would make one. I mean, she wasn't looking at a whole bunch of sculptures. She thought, you know, we do one, involve people, that would be great. But it really kind of snowballed once people started talking about it. And Lois told me that by the time Beverly left, they had made like 20 sculptures. Now, I don't know that they were all, you know, they were all not that huge size. She made tabletop sculptures too, So I don't know really all the different sizes, but yeah, John Dew Foundry Silvas.
Hmm. How many sculptures remain here in the Quad Cities, and where are they located?
So we know of at least four, and located in different places. The biggest one, Trapezium, is what Beverly called it. People who see it often call it the tuning fork because it kind of looks like that with these two trapezoidal shapes sort of next to each other. That's the biggest, the tallest. That was originally installed in front of what was the Davenport Art Gallery on 12th Street in Davenport, 12th and Division. And then somewhere around 2001, when the Putnam was building its IMAX theater, they needed the space where that sculpture was to be the new drive-through for a different entrance. So then it was talked about moving it. And also at that time, going on at the same time, the art gallery people were already thinking of moving to a new location, which has now become the Figge Art Museum. And so they really wanted a new place for this sculpture. And Dee Bremer, who was at that time, she's very interested in art, is now serves with the Figge group. But she was the public works director, and she said, well, let's put it at the public works department. There's a big space for it, a big lawn, and this large kind of sculpture really needs a big space. So that is where that's where it remains today. So people can see it by driving up Brady Street and turning right on 46th Street in Davenport and just keep driving and eventually look to your left at Public Works. And as they say, you can't miss it because it's a great big sculpture. So that's one of them.
You really can't miss it. I drove by the other day and eventually, you know, when 46th Street is extended, I'm sure they will extend it probably over to Eastern Avenue at some point. People will see it more often. Right now, there isn't that temptation to drive down that portion of the street because it dead ends. But it's a very nice park-like setting, and you need a big space for a sculpture of that size.
Yes, that's right. And whenever somebody says to Dee Bremer, why don't we put it somewhere where more people can see it? That is exactly what she says. I mean, some more people will see it eventually. And plus, moving it would be a big expense. You know, do something else with that money. Buy another piece of art and leave Trapezium where it is. So that's the biggest one. Then the second biggest one would be, it's titled Spirit of Place. The people who helped make it at the John Dew Foundry, it was originally displayed outside of the foundry, and they called it the wedge, because again, that's kind of what it looks like. There's a wedge. And again, when the foundry operations closed down, Deer wanted it to go to a good place. And so it was donated, and I can't remember now if it was donated to the city of Moline or to the entity that runs what is now Tax Slayer Center, but it was donated to and put on the grounds of what was originally opened as the Mark of the Quad Cities in 1993, and also significantly on the land where John Deere's first manufacturing plant was in the Quad Cities, well, in Moline. And the company donated the land for that civic center, and then they donated this sculpture to go on the land as a celebratory thing for the opening.
And how perfect that, since the John Deere foundry workers made it, that it's now located on the exact spot where John Deere had his first factory. And it's also a beautiful setting. It's close by the river. It's kind of partway between the Tax Slayer Center and the hotel, the Radisson Hotel, that's right next door. And it's worth walking around. There's a nice plaque there that talks about Beverly Pepper when she created it. It is wedge-shaped, but there's this conical base, and then there's a connecting portion with an open circle, and then your eye kind of naturally moves upwards towards the wedge, which extends towards the sky. And, you know, one characteristic of her work is that it's, even though it's massive, it's large, it's made of these heavy materials, it appears light. And that one certainly does. And those are the two largest. There are several smaller ones. Where are they located?
Well, and then another one, and I did not go look at this for the article because I kind of ran out of time. And Carolyn, you may be better to talk about this, but a piece titled Pythias Presence is in the Figge Art Museum. And I believe it's at the top of some stairs. But if you went to the Figge and looked at it, maybe you can better say where people can find that one.
Well, the Figge is just reopening this week.
Yeah.
On June 9th. It's just under 10 feet tall, I believe. And I think it's now in the second floor orientation space. It's been moved to an exhibit that's celebrating the centennial of women having the right to vote, which is, you know, which is really a beautiful way of honoring a leading female sculptor.
Yes.
But it's a little bit more delicate looking. It has a conical structure again out at the base, and two very tall parallel beams extend upward from that. And then there's some visual curiosities. There's this oval space about three quarters of the way up that catches your eye. And then there's this connection, like a linear connection near the top that brings the two parallel beams together. But it also gives you this sense of lightness.
Mm-hmm. Then the fourth one, which I don't know has a name, but it isn't really on public view so much. It's at the Dear World headquarters in Moline, in the dining area. I believe it's on an outdoor patio. So it's mainly available to Dear employees and guests. Mm-hmm. But certainly, that's a lot of people and a lot of people who see it. Mm-hmm. That particular sculpture was, I guess, on display inside the foundry. And then, of course, again, when the foundry closed down, it needed a new home.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe Beverly Pepper's work, and how has it been described in articles?
Somewhat like you have said, you know, it's a heavy material, obviously, but that there's a sense of lightness to it. And she described, I guess, you know, just for a total layperson would look at this and say, well, this is abstract in the sense that it doesn't look like a person. It doesn't look like an animal. It doesn't look like something we're familiar with. And Beverly said in that, well, she is quoted in her obituary that she did not have any like preconceived meaning as to what her sculptures were supposed to mean. She sort of wanted that interpreted by the viewer. So it's kind of what the viewer sees. And the other thing about, I guess, her sculptures is that they almost look kind of like totems, and they sit and they soar up into the sky and look at them that way. The other thing she said, in, as you know, reading that obituary, she talked about her art having a permanence. I like it to have a permanence defying the violent world of alienation and threat. And I thought, oh, that is not something actually I would see in that myself. But yes, the idea, because some art, you know, is very ephemeral. It's just meant for the moment. It comes and it goes. But this is something permanent. And I think human beings are a lot of times looking for permanence. And then there's the sense of her, the use of her materials. It's that she is one of the first to work with that Core 10 steel that develops that patina that resembles rust, which interestingly is exactly what the Dear World headquarters is clad with, that same. So she was using that in sculpture, what the company used for its building, which some might call a piece of sculpture as well.
It is sculptural. It's a gorgeous piece of architecture. It's we're so lucky to have it here. Yeah, I had read too that that the pieces that she created here, at least the wedge that's or the spirit of place is really what it's called, was the first sculpture made of ductile iron. So she really was very creative and somewhat ingenious in terms of her use of materials. And because of all those things you mentioned, her sculpture really is beloved. It's all over the world. She lived in Italy for decades, and there are many pieces there, but within the U.S. at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, in New York City at the Brooklyn Museum, Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, many other places. For your newspaper articles, you spoke with Orrin Rockhold, who's a retired pattern maker from the John Deere Foundry, and he worked with Beverly Pepper during her residency program here. What did he say about the process of making these massive sculptures?
It was a challenge, and I believe he was up to it, as were his co-workers. I mean, I'm not sure what they thought when this first got started. You know, here they are, you know, making machines and equipment, and this woman artist comes in and they're told that they can spend their time making sculptures. That would have been a switch, I would say. But anyway, there was a lot of challenges because, well, one was the size. Now these sculptures were cast, and that is a process that always sort of befuddles me. I try to understand it and I kind of fail. But one thing I do know, when they ladle in this mold, they ladle in molten iron. Well, it was so big that they had to have numerous ladles, not just one, but two or three. So that, and they also had to, because of its, some of the sizes of the works, they had to make them so that they would come apart so that they could move them. And then they had to go back together, you know, in such a way that they didn't look like they had ever come apart, you know, like they were one massive thing. So, yes, there were those, and just how to do it. I mean, I think they really enjoyed the challenge of it and took pride in it. And those, but the size and the being able to take it apart are the two things that I remember him talking to me about.
It's really extraordinary to think about industry taking a break, devoting an entire foundry to making art. And I just can't see that happening now because of the financial constraints. But what a beautiful story, really, that did happen here in 1981.
Yes, I thought that too. I was like, wow, they turned over their whole factory to this. And exactly, I thought, wow, would this happen today? I mean, it is sort of, when you read it, you think, did this really happen? It seems so amazing. But yes, it did. And yes, you're right, it is. One of the things I suppose that makes those, another thing that makes those sculptures so one of a kind, I mean, because of where they were made and, you know, that this might not be a thing that happens today.
After the numerous pieces were completed, there was an exhibit of Pepper's work at the Davenport Art Gallery, which sounded like quite a community celebration, especially for the foundry workers who helped make them.
Yes. They 10 of the sculptures that were, you know, smaller, that would fit in a building, 10 of them, and they were called the Moline Markers, and they were displayed, yes, and there was a big a grand opening of the exhibit, and Lois told me later that, you know, here was her quote that she said to me. She said she would never forget the expression of immense pride on the face of a woman employee, yes, who looked at the work and said, well, we did it. And Lois said that makes it all worthwhile, that she wanted, you know, people to be involved in art, not just look at it, but actually see how it could be part of their own lives, not just someone else's life, someone who is a quote artist, but that everyone can do that.
Yes, that's the essence of community art, is mm-hmm. empowering people to believe that they too can create it.
Mm-hmm. And be that kind of inspiration. And that was what Lois was about all her life, to bring art to people. And, you know, she said, like, if you've never had ice cream, you don't know that you miss it. But then once you do, boy, you want more of that. And that's what she tried to instill in people, to make their lives more rich and full and not just all drudge and work and everyday stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lois Junklin, again, was the head of the Visiting Artist Series, who helped mm-hmm. bring Beverly Pepper here. And Beverly Pepper died this year on February 5th. She was 97 years old. When I read her obituary, what I was struck by was how bold she was and how much I wished that I'd been able to meet her.
Yes, yes. Yeah, she took on things that she, you know, sometimes, well, what she said, again, in the obituary, is she said, you take opportunities and then, you know, they might not come again, so you grab them, even if you really maybe aren't qualified to do everything, and then you deal with it, and you make it so.
Yes, she was fearless. She was invited, apparently, to partake in a sculpture festival, but needed to know how to weld in order to do so. So she actually lied about being able to weld. She figured she could learn the process between when she had made that commitment and when the festival was. So she took on an apprenticeship, and ultimately she created a piece for the exhibition that established her reputation as a world-class sculptor.
Yes. And I'm sure that, you know, wins points, wins acceptance too, when you go into a foundry, if you actually, you know something about the process and could actually do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I imagine there weren't a lot of women creating these types of works back in the 1960s when she started, when she moved really into her sculpture. She'd been a painter originally, but mm-hmm. began sculpting and then never stopped.
No.
Yeah. Her, just a quick mention, her daughter is Joy Graham, and I'm not sure if people will recognize that name, but she won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1996. And her daughter has a connection to our community. Jory Graham earned her MFA at the Writers Workshop in Iowa City and taught there for many years. So Beverly really had this larger artistic family. Her son is also a photographer and a director. So it must've been quite an extraordinary family to grow up in.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Alma Gall, thank you for sharing your insights into the sculptor Beverly Pepper, and it was a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, thank you. Same here. It was one of, yes, an interesting story. Sometimes I say working at the paper is like visiting a museum every day. You learn something new and find out about things you didn't know about and share them with your readers. Yes.
Well, thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. Three of Beverly Pepper's sculptures are available for public viewing in the Quad Cities: Spirit of Place outside the Tax Slayer Center in Moline, Trapezium outside the Davenport Public Works Building on 46th Street in Tremont, and Pythia's Presence at the Figge Art Museum, which is currently in the second floor orientation space. The Figge Art Museum reopened this week, and there's free admission throughout the month of June. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK. Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.